Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Va'et Hanan. This week, Rabbi Meir Schweiger discusses Va'et Hanan. Rabbi Meir Schweiger is a senior member of the Pardes faculty and also serves as a Pardes Mashkiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
Thank you, Larry. Today's parsha is Parshat Va'et Hanan. Today I would like to examine the opening section, which I will call Moshe's Unanswered Prayer. In my mind, one of the most poignant sections of the Torah. As an introduction to our story, I would like to read a statement from the Talmud that appears in Masechet Brachot 32b. Amar Rabbi Chanin, Amar Rabbi Chanina. Kol ha-ma'arich betfilato, ein tfilato chozeret reikam. Anyone who prolongs in prayer, who takes a long time to pray, their prayer will not be returned empty-handed. Minalan, from where do we know this? Mi Moshe Rabbeinu. Shenemar, as it says, a quote from Deuteronomy chapter 9, verse 26. And I prayed to God. Uchtiv Batrei, and it's written subsequently, which is Deuteronomy chapter 10, verse 10, both verses in next week's Torah portion. Vayishma Hashem Elai gam bapam ahi, and God listened to me also at that time. Next week's Parsha describes, in next week's Parsha, Moshe describes the sin of the golden calf and all of the efforts which he made to get God to forgive the people for what they had done. In fact, in verse chapter 9, verse 25, Moshe actually says that he pleaded before God for 40 days and for 40 nights. And in fact, according to a rabbinic tradition, it was actually more like 80 days and 80 nights. There were two sets of petitioning to God. Although the initial 40 days is when Moshe achieved God's forgiveness of the people. 40 days and 40 nights, I would say, is certainly a very long time to be praying. And Moshe's prayers were answered. And I would like to just note, not only were they answered, but what God actually said. If we look at chapter 10, verse 11, Moshe says, and God said to me, get up, go, journey before the people, that they will come and take possession of the land, which I have sworn to their forefathers to give to them. God's response to Moshe is, go and lead the people, lead them to the promised land, to take possession of that land. In the sin of the golden calf, perhaps more than in any other story, we see Moshe's power of prayer. But it is not only there. We see it also in the story of Miriam in chapter 12 in the book of Numbers, where Miriam speaks badly of Moshe and where God brings upon her leprosy, that Moshe prays to God, please God, heal her. And in another place in the Talmud, we see this as a model of how one doesn't actually have to pray at length, where it's possible to have a very, very short and concise prayer, which will also be answered. And ultimately, God does forgive Miriam. I would like to go back to that section in the Talmud, in Brachot 32b, where we have another statement. Am Rabbi Chama Bar Chanina. Rabbi Chama Bar Chanina said, Im ra'a adam shitpalel, if someone sees that he has prayed, v'lo na'ane, and he was not answered, yachzor v'yitpalel, he should continue to pray. Shenemar, as it says, and this is a verse from Psalms 29, kavei el Hashem, hope to God, chazek v'yematz libecha, strengthen yourself, v'kavei el Hashem, and hope to God. And clearly, the understanding he has of this verse is, hope to God, pr- pray to God for something that you need, something that you want. If you didn't get the response you wanted, then strengthen yourself. Pray once again. And that statement seems to be advocating that people should be persistent. People should not give up, but they should continue to pray and not lose hope. And I think the word hope is very important, that there is always hope that God will answer your prayer. With that background, I would like to examine our story. The parasha starts out by saying, Va'et Chanan El Hashem, which I will translate for the moment as, and I beseeched God. I presented my petition before God. Ba'eta hi lemor, at that time, saying. There are many words that we have for prayer. Probably the one that we're most familiar with is tefillah. Tefillah is a very interesting word. It seems to clearly be related to the word. The root is pe lamed lamed, pilel, which has to do with judgment. Lehit palel is to be engaged in self-judgment, self-examination, which is one mode of prayer where one stands before God and actually examines themselves. In another podcast, I've actually spoken about another word for prayer by Isaac, Vayetar, Atira. Atira, which means petitioning, pleading. And in fact, in that context, I said that the word Atira has to do with the idea of begging God, of really being persistent. And in fact, in that podcast, I noted that Isaac really had that power of prayer, of just plugging away day by day, the context being praying for a child. It would seem that Isaac prayed not for 40 days, but perhaps for 20 years from the moment he got married to Rebecca. Or if you want to assume that he waited 10 years, and after 10 years that he saw that she was barren, that's when he really began to pray. So at least for 10 years he prayed. That's certainly in keeping with the statement that I quoted from Masechet Brachot, that if you pray and you're not answered, so keep on praying. And clearly with Isaac, it worked. He prayed, and ultimately God was responsive to his prayer. The word tchina is a very, very interesting word. Rashi, on this verse, says that the word tchina is related to the word chinun. Chinun, which we could understand as chen, finding favor, finding grace. And he says that the languages of chinun is always a language of matnat chinam, of a gift which is gratuitous, a gift which is not coming to you, which is purely the goodwill of the one who's giving it. And then Rashi goes on to say that even though righteous people could say that God, on the basis of my merits, give me X, Y, and Z, but whenever they pray to God, they look to God to give them, as I said, a gratuitous gift, a gift which is above and beyond anything which they could possibly deserve. I will come back to this in another minute. Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch, who I've quoted on a number of occasions, the leading Orthodox rabbi in Germany in the 1800s, he gives another interpretation of the word Va'et Chanan, and he says, because it's in the reflexive, it means that a person works on himself, purifies their heart, so that they should be worthy to have their request fulfilled. And on that basis, he says, it is obligatory upon one who prays to focus all of their energies before they pray, to make sure that when they pray with the right spirit. And I would like to examine this statement because it is based on something that appears in the Talmud and certainly how it's been interpreted by a number of commentaries. There is a statement which appears in Tractate Shabbat 127a, which says, there are six things, six types of actions, where a person eats of their fruits in this world and where the principle remains for them in the world to come, which is a way of saying that there are six types of actions where not only will you be rewarded for them in this world, but the reward that you receive are just the fruits. The essential reward you receive will be in the world to come. And in that list we have being hospitable to guests, visiting the sick, making peace between people, studying Torah, and also iyun tefillah, literally meaning looking into your prayer. And a number of commentaries say that what do we mean by iyun tefillah? Iyun tefillah, and I'll quote one commentary, a medieval rabbi called the Ritva, who says that a person is focused, directed in their prayer with tremendous, what we call kavana, tremendous focus. His reward is great. And he says, what does that mean to be focused in prayer? So obviously that means that you're clearly thinking about what you're saying. You are very conscious of the fact that you are now standing before God, the King of Kings. And what he also adds is that one prays out of love, out of a sense of service of God. The prayer is not motivated by ulterior motives. Your prayer is motivated because you really love God, because you want to serve God. So that if I now take this idea and apply it to our situation with the way Rabbi Hirsch would like to understand it, that what Moshe is saying is that if I have any expectation of God fulfilling my request, I have to make sure that my prayer is the most perfect prayer that can possibly be. I have to focus. I have to do it with the right intentions. And I might add that when Moses says, Va'etchanan el Hashem, he is actually testifying about himself. That I really prepared myself for that moment. I made sure that I was fully focused, that this prayer was coming from the right place. If I now go and add what Rashi said, that coming from the right place means I wasn't saying to God, you owe me this, but I was saying, God, what I'm asking for is something which you don't owe me. I'm asking you for something which is above and beyond. I'm asking you for something which is a matnat chinam, a gratuitous gift. Now let's go back to our section. Moshe says, I prayed at that time. What is that time? Well, if we look at last week's parsha at the very end, Moshe describes the process of the Jewish people beginning to take possession of the land of Israel. And the very last thing which he speaks about was the defeat of two very powerful kings, Sihon and Og, on the eastern side of the Jordan, and how their land had been given to the 2.5 tribes of Reuven, Gad, and half of Manasseh. Who was the one who led the Jewish people in battle against these two nations? It was Moshe. It was Moshe who, in chapter 21 of the book of Numbers, Bamidbar, had been told by God, go and engage them in battle. And therefore, Moshe says to God in our opening verses, verse 24, God, you have begun to show your servant your greatness, your strong hand. Who is like you in the heavens and on earth? Who acts as you do? Moshe uses the words, kima'asecha v'chigvuratecha, as your actions, and who is like you in your strength, in your courage. So that what Moshe is saying to God is, you have begun to show me okay, your greatness. Perhaps I will flip this around. I have begun to be your instrument in bringing about this process of the Jewish people entering, taking possession of the land of Israel. It's at that moment that Moshe says, perhaps now let me continue that process. Note interestingly, in verse 25, Moshe says, let me pass over, please, to see the good land, which is on the other side, the good mountain, Halavanon, which the rabbis understand as being an allusion to the temple. Two things which I'd like to point out. Moshe says, please. He doesn't demand it, he requests it. And Moshe's request is a very modest request. Let me just cross over. He doesn't ask for being the leader of the Jewish people. And the rabbis see from this verse that Moshe was actually prepared to forego leading the people into the land of Israel. What is it that he wants? He just wants to be able to have that engagement with the land of Israel on a personal level, because he wants to be able to experience the holiness of the land of Israel, the place where God will cause his presence to dwell. So that Moshe's request is a very, very limited request. So if I can sum up what we've had up to this point, Moshe clearly gets himself ready for this moment of prayer. He does everything to be focused. He does everything to make this the perfect prayer. The prayer experience for Moshe, first and foremost, is coming from a place of his love of God, of his service of God. He is not demanding of God, you owe me this. What he's saying to God is, you have already showed me your greatness. You have used me as your instrument in beginning the process of the Jewish people taking possession of the land. And here I would like to insert, perhaps, now you emphasize, perhaps there is a softening of God's decree. Perhaps there is this opening which might allow God to be magnanimous, to be overly generous, and go above and beyond and allow Moshe to just come into the land. He won't be the leader, but at least let him just be able to come together with the Jews, take possession of the land. And Moshe is not even speaking of possession as a Levite. He will not be given a portion in the land, but simply to enter that land. Which therefore means that in many ways, this would be the quintessential prayer. There couldn't be any other prayer which perhaps would be more acceptable to God. And what are we told in verse 26? And God became angry at me on your behalf. He didn't listen to me. And God said to me, enough to you. Do not speak to me. Continue to speak to me regarding this matter. Go up on the top of the mountain. Lift up your eyes. West, north, south, east. See with your eyes, for you will not cross over the Jordan. Which means that what God is saying is, yes, if your request is that you would like to see the land, that I will be willing to give to you. You can go up the mountain. From there, you will be able to view the length and breadth of the land. And according to rabbinic tradition, Moshe actually, from the point where he was, could see the full scope of the land of Israel. But you cannot cross over. And not only that, but it uses a very interesting language. I translated verse 26 as God became angry at me. But in fact, the word there is not the usual word for being angry, because the usual word is vayichar, charon af. Instead, it's vayit'aber, which is a very, very unusual word, which we don't find anywhere else. Interestingly, Rashi says God was filled with rage against Moshe. But actually, the root is Ayin Bet Resh, Resh, which is connected to the word cross, as God actually says to Moshe, Lo ta'avor et ha-yardein. So what I would say is that what God is doing is saying, let's get on with this, okay? Let's not be stuck in the past. I want to move forward. And moving forward means this issue is done. We finished talking about it. Let's now go on to what needs to be done. And interestingly, it says that God is saying we need to move forward, lema'anchem, for you. There are many commentaries who say that God became angry at me because of you. Because of you, which might be an allusion to the sin of the spies, as I noted in a previous podcast, Moshe's failure of leadership, and it's because of the Jews that God said he will not enter the land of Israel. But Hirsch in a number of places says lema'anchem means for your sake, for your good, which means that God was saying that for the good of the Jewish people, Moshe has to be able to move forward. Moving forward means to forget about going into the land of Israel, to forget about his own personal issues, personal desires, and to completely focus on what the needs of the Jewish people are for them to take possession of the land of Israel. And perhaps that's connected with what appears at the end of this section, verse 28, when God says, command Joshua, strengthen him, because he will pass before this people. He will give them this land as their inheritance, this land which you will see. Which means what God is saying to Moshe is, you have to move forward. Moving forward means you have to acknowledge Joshua will be your successor. You have to do everything to empower Joshua so that he will succeed in that mission. And Rashi makes a very interesting comment. He says, what does it mean to empower him? Well, the first thing which Rashi says is command Joshua. Command him about what? About all the troubles and the burdens and the contentiousness of the Jewish people. Which means, on the one hand, you have to make Joshua fully aware of who this people are and of the difficulty of what it means to be a leader. To have to deal with what I would call perhaps very unreasonable demands, expectations, with people who can be very, very time-consuming. What we would call today high maintenance. And at the same time, you have to strengthen Joshua. What does that mean? Well, Joshua will say, why would I want to enter such a situation? Especially having seen what happened to Moshe, that ultimately Moshe was punished. Ultimately, Moshe did not actualize, okay, his mission of taking the Jewish people into the land of Israel. So I should now be willing to put everything out for the Jewish people and ultimately just be banging my head against the wall and I would even say ultimately punished for them. It takes an unbelievable amount of fortitude, patience, and I would even say self-sacrifice to be able to be a true leader. And therefore what God says to Moshe is, this is what you need to be involved in. This is what it means to be moving forward. And therefore, I do not want you to continue praying about this. This is it. This is God's final word. And in fact, that was it. From that point on, Moshe has to accept the fact that he will not enter the land of Israel. From that point on, Moshe has to be focused on empowering Joshua and doing everything that he can to maximize the ability of the Jewish people to not only enter the land, but to take possession of the land. I have mentioned in a previous podcast that this story can actually be seen as Moshe's having to come to grips with the idea of a chok. A chok meaning a law which baffles my rationality, which I simply have to accept. Moshe has to be willing to accept, for whatever reasons God has, that no matter what, he cannot enter the land of Israel. That no matter what, he can no longer pray for that. And Moshe accepts it. Therefore, this story becomes a very important precedent for another statement which appears in that same section in the Talmud, which says the following. Rabbi Chiya bar Abba said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, anyone who prays at length and looks into that prayer, ma'ayen ba, in the end comes to heartbreak. And at first glance, this statement seems to contradict a number of statements which I mentioned earlier about how whoever prays at great length will not be returned empty-handed. Whoever prays at great length and is not answered should continue to pray. And the key to this is this word ma'ayen ba. Now, interestingly, a number of medieval commentaries on the Talmud raise the difficulty. Well, we find in the other places in the Talmud, which I quoted in Tractate Shabbat, the concept of iyun tefillah, which means being focused, as being a very, very positive thing. All of a sudden now, this seems to be a very negative thing. And Tosfot, a major school of commentary founded by the grandchildren of Rashi, say, what does it mean, kol ha-ma'arich betfila u'mayen ba? Somebody who expects that his request will be answered because he had the right intention, because he was focused. And this is a point which is taken up by a number of other commentaries in one form or another, which I think becomes an extremely important theological statement. And that is, that from a Jewish perspective, a person should never expect that God has to answer their prayer. No one can ever say, I am righteous, therefore I deserve this. I have just done the most exceptional type of prayer. You owe me. And someone who adopts that type of attitude, so according to one statement, that person will come to heartbreak, which on one level means it will just destroy you. One could even say on a certain level, it could destroy your faith, because you would say, how could it possibly be that here I am, I prayed to God, God didn't answer my prayer. What kind of God is that? We talk about a God who is compassionate, who is giving, who is kind, and look at how this God is being extremely cruel. In other passages, we find that adopting such an attitude actually invokes the wrath of God. A person will be punished for that type of thing. As I said, this is a very important theological principle. It's a principle which ultimately Moshe realized, Abraham realized. I would say any of the great leaders of the Jewish people, any of our righteous people, who were virtuosos in prayer, realized that praying does not guarantee the result. And that is why, in the aftermath of what happened in our opening section, Moshe goes on. Moshe continues to lead the Jewish people. I would even say that Moshe, till his dying day, invests all of his energies towards the goal of the Jewish people ultimately taking possession of the land of Israel. And where Moshe, with all the difficulties involved, puts on the back burner his personal agenda. Because ultimately, what matters to him is service of God and the well-being of the Jewish people. I will end with a story, which I think I've mentioned in a previous podcast, and which I think very much reflects what I've been speaking about. 24 years ago, there was an Israeli soldier, Nachshon Waxman, who was kidnapped by terrorists. And this became the story, preoccupied the people of Israel, not only in real time, but long after. Nachshon's mother, a former American, day in, day out was on Israeli television appealing to Hamas, to the terrorists, to release her son. And the reason I'm bringing up this story is because on the Thursday night after Nachshon had been kidnapped, there was a mass rally at the Western Wall. 20,000, 50,000, the numbers perhaps, you know, don't matter that much. 50,000 people praying at the Western Wall, a cross-section of Israel, religious, secular, Ashkenazim, Sfaradim, across the board, everyone praying, focused, hoping for the safe release of Nachshon Waxman. The following night, Friday night, after the Israeli government had actually had information as to where he was being held, which ironically was about a kilometer and a half from his home, the government decided to attempt a rescue mission. Unfortunately, Nachshon was killed in the process. And I will never forget that during the following week, an Israeli radio newscaster, while Nachshon's parents were sitting Shiva, interviewed his father Yehuda, and he asked them a question which I thought was so absurd, which was so, I would even say, cruel. He asked them, tell me something. As an observant Jew, how do you explain the fact that the night before Nachshon was killed, 50,000 people prayed to God, an unprecedented experience, and God didn't answer their prayers? How could that be? For you, how could you believe in a God? Either there is no God, or there is a God who is just cruel, is obtuse. And I was so impressed by the answer which was given then. Yehuda Waxman said, you have a mistaken understanding. It's not that God did not answer my prayer. God did answer my prayer, but it wasn't the answer that I wanted. And then he went on to say that there were many times in his life where God answered him in the way that he wanted. But that doesn't mean that it has to happen every time. Unfortunately, this tragic situation brought out a very real understanding of what prayer is about. And perhaps this is something which we should very much reflect upon. Ultimately, prayer is not about me. Ultimately, there is no one who can say, no matter how much they invest in that prayer, no matter how much that prayer was such a powerful experience, that whatever was prayed for has to be. We do prayer, as the Ritva said, coming from a place of love of God, coming from a place of service of God. We do everything that we can to properly serve God. At the same time, we are also well aware that ultimately God does what God thinks is the appropriate thing. And who are we to understand all of the considerations? Who are we to question the validity of that decision? I wish us all that we should learn how to pray properly, and that at the same time we also recognize that prayer is not something which is about us. Prayer is something about God and about our need to connect with God, to serve God, to love God, irregardless of the answer which we get, which perhaps we may not understand, but may be ultimately for our good, for the good of the Jewish people, and for the world around us. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.